Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN Radio and CLTV. Thank you, CLTV. Philip Pump joins us right now from the National. He's a national correspondent for the Washington Post. And Philip, I don't know if you've been following the news, but it appears that we are now in full, complete circus mode in Washington, D.C. Today, you had a congressman eat fried chicken in his committee chair seat because he said that the Attorney General of the United States is a chicken for not showing up in front of him. And I thought, is this how stupid politicians in Washington, starting with the president all the way down through the legislature and through cabinet level and all the rest of them, they think we're dumb as poop out here in America, that they have to play these games to get our attention? Is that really what's going on?
I mean, that's true to some extent. I mean, it certainly is not the first example of a member of Congress doing some gimmicky nonsense. And, you know, to be fair, it worked. We're sitting here talking about the Attorney General not appearing before his committee, right? I mean, that was his goal. To that extent, it worked. Was there a more mature way to do it? Probably. But, you know, I mean, I think that his point, broadly speaking, is why is the Attorney General not wanting to come and answer questions? And I think that, you know, to the extent the Democrats want to highlight that ongoing effort by members of the Trump administration not to answer questions to them, I think it was a success.
Is it worry-making? It is to me, but I would imagine to a lot of Americans, that we now have such the veneer of decorum, at least at how people treat each other, talk about each other, has been ripped so thin that you have now, with the Mueller report, and I guess we kind of just had to assume this is going to happen, is that now Robert Mueller is being, you know, they're taking swipes at each other. The Attorney General is taking swipes at Robert Mueller, and James Comey now wrote this whole other op-ed that's, you know, talking about how everybody's calling everybody else names. And there's such recrimination. And I think that Comey's piece, actually, is pretty fascinating, his op-ed, because what he's saying is that this is how bad things really happen in government, because now everybody's afraid to do anything because there is this fear that they are going to be publicly called out, and that, you know, that's the ridicule piece and the name calling and the way that immediately just by saying something, it can be 100% inaccurate, it could be a lie, but if you say, hey, well, that didn't happen, if you have enough authority, people have to go along with it. And I think the other piece that's fascinating is he says that all the people around the president, and Comey says this about himself, that when he was in the room and the president was talking about, you know, he had the largest crowd ever, right, at an inauguration, or he, you know, any of the other things that he says that are fabulous things that he says, if you don't stop him and correct him, are you actually giving your imprimatur to it? And then it becomes truth, and you're part of the bigger lie. It's fascinating, and he says that's what everybody's going through. Is that covering this? Do you get that sense that he's accurate about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is always the case that people in positions of significant power generally surround themselves with people who are unwilling to say no to them, right? I mean, that's sort of how the system works, generally speaking. I think that what's unusual about Trump and what's unusual about the Trump administration is that Trump comes to the presidency from a world where that was the world in which he lived for decades, right? You know, a lot of legislators come up out of the Senate, out of the House, out of, you know, being in the governor's seat. They are used to the sort of the back and forth, the fighting of politics. They're used to being held accountable. Trump is not used to being held accountable. He ran a private company for decades by himself. He was the dictator of the Trump Organization. He's not used to accountability. And so his response to efforts to hold him accountable, both inside the White House and outside the White House, is to rebel, to reject it, to rail against it. And I think that part of what we're seeing now from the Trump administration is that sort of metastasizing throughout his administration, with a lot of different people in a lot of different places saying, no, I'm simply not going to be held accountable by Congress. I'm not going to be held accountable by the judiciary, because they see that coming down from the top. I think that's really the issue here, that he sort of has made sure that is ever present within the administration.
It is it's a different time. And I don't know that we're ever going to go back. I was thinking about this, you know, as it pertains to other news stories. that in the social media world today, the big social media story being that Facebook and theoretically also it's all the other social media instruments underneath it, whether it's Instagram or Snapchat or any of the rest, are taking down more polarizing, controversial figures, people who have been known to call people out and, you know, and call for either direct hatred or violence or whatever it is. And most notably, Chicago's very own Louis Farrakhan is one of them. And, you know, the Milo Yiannopoulos is another one. And they're going to jump up and down and scream that their right to free speech has been impinged, right? Which, of course, it is not, because you don't have a right to Facebook. The founding fathers, we could ask, but I think they're all dead. But I think that doesn't apply. So, you know, you just wonder in this world, will we ever be able? Is this always going to be what politics is going to be? You have to be dramatic and Kardashian-like, and you know, big, bright, you know, loud things to get people's attention, and then people are going to fight about it, but that's okay. That's what you want, to distract them from other things.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're likely to see over the short term is we're going to see presidential candidates who, on the Democratic side, running against Trump, or if Trump is reelected in 2024 on the Republican side as well, we're going to see people promising a restoration of normalcy. I think that there are a lot of Americans who are simply exhausted. Even people who like Donald Trump are simply exhausted with paying this much attention to politics all the time. And I think there will be this call for a restoration of normalcy. But I think those presidents then will embrace a lot of the expanded powers and the sort of the shifts of norms that Trump has instituted, because essentially what Trump has done is he has tried his best to make the presidency a more powerful institution, and presidents, generally speaking, are totally fine with that and embrace it. So I think we'll see a lot of lip service about the presidency in particular. I think the next president will probably embrace some or much of what Trump is actually trying to do with the presidency. That said, yeah, I mean, I think that in the social media world, we're already seeing, you know, the breakout star on the Democratic side is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who, you know, obviously her politics represent a part of the Democratic base which has not had a voice beyond Bernie Sanders for the past several years, but she's also very adept at social media. That was part of the way that she really gained a lot of attention. You know, her tone on social media is different than Trump's, but the way she is effective at using social media is definitely a standout among politicians. So, yeah, I mean, I think that while you will still have random, you know, senators, you know, Mike Rounds will still be there doing his thing, but no one will ever have heard of him, right? You know, I think that a lot of the politicians who you're going to hear about in particular will be ones who are good at that game.
Right. Oh, I think without question. And, you know, it's interesting. You talk about presidential powers. I don't want to get too wonky here, but I think it's too late now in this conversation, quite honestly, Philip. I think you've already taken this off the wonk cliff. But there is an argument that conservatives have made that Barack Obama, through executive order and all the things that he did, he was trying to coalesce more power around the presidency,
right?
And that is the those who support the president doing this, that's their excuse. Well, Barack Obama did it. Well, they didn't like it when Barack Obama did it. And I don't think that at the end of the day, it's going to be better for America to have a super powerful president. That's what, again, going back to the whole concept here, the original concept, the whole idea was not to have an individual that could do that. A dynamic leader, you know, like a king or, you know, those sorts of folks. And the charismatic leader, which, you know, became a sociological conversation 100 years ago, you know, was never foreseen by them because you didn't have mass media. But now with mass media and ability for somebody to be seen, to your point about Donald Trump maybe creating such he makes a spectacle of himself every day. He's great at being the top story every day. No other human in American history has ever done that the way he has done that. And that is, it's a great art to do it. And that was not foreseen. So it is interesting because he doesn't seem to really be encumbered by even the kinds of things. When I'm watching this thing with William Barr, and I'm stopping and I'm thinking, my God, here's the Attorney General of the United States, and he's getting as rhetorically pugilistic as the president has been, and he's saying, you know, I don't have to, you know, screw you, Congress, I don't have to do anything here. That's just not the way things have been done in the modern era, and it's a little scary. It's also the kind of thing that William Barr would have stood up and railed against had, you know, a previous Democratic Attorney General tried to do, you know, a Janet Reno or, you know, anybody else along those lines. And it just, I don't know, we're no longer, we it is no longer rules. It's, hey, those guys did it, so I'm going to do it. And it's fourth grade all over again in the play lot, and it's slightly unsettling. Hey, let me ask you about one other big piece of news here, Phil, before I let you go. Stephen Moore, who was on the show 2 weeks ago in the studio making his case for why he should be on the Federal Reserve Board, has now withdrawn his name. He seemed like he was going to try to dive all the way through this because he could have withdrawn 2 weeks ago and not undergone all the rest of it. What do we suspect is happening there?
Yeah, I mean, I think this one's pretty straightforward. Stephen Moore was always the sort of pick who was going to attract a lot of really, really negative media attention. President Trump has sort of prided himself on being able to push through people who get a lot of negative media attention. I mean, Brett Kavanaugh is a classic example of people who take really, really get hammered, but still end up with the positions that Trump wanted them in. Roy Moore is a good counterexample to that. But, you know, I think that Stephen Moore, was just so outside the boundaries of what would gain approval in Washington, D.C. I mean, I'm not sure whether or not they try to advance the Herman Cain nomination in part to try and make Moore seem more normal, but I think Moore ended up seeming less normal than Herman Cain simply by virtue of all the things he'd said over time, all the times he'd been on TV and, you know, said outlandish things, you know, regardless of his economics, which the Post's own Catherine Rampell pointed out were pretty suspect as well. Regardless of that, he was just someone who was always going to be a toxic fit for a Senate confirmation hearing. And so it was always a weird pick. This was totally inevitable. I'm sure you knew it was inevitable back when you had him on your show. You know, more and more stuff came out about him, and it just, however tenable Donald Trump thought it was, it became pretty apparent that Moore was not going to last.
All right. There. We'll see what's next. He has two positions to fill. I mean, isn't there some story you go to and buy a Federal Bank Reserve governor? Isn't there, like, there's got to be, like, a place where they always get these guys from, isn't there?
I mean, normal administrations will pick sort of wonky economist dudes who generally line up with the president's political vision. I mean, part of the problem here is that what President Trump wants the Federal Reserve Board to do is his whim, right? He liked Moore and Cain because both of them wanted to drop interest rates, which Trump saw as boosting the economy, raising GDP, helping him for 2020. I mean, that's what Trump wanted to see from a Federal Reserve Board member, and there aren't a lot of people who are willing to acquiesce to what Donald Trump wants to do. So part of the issue here was he had to nominate people who were outside the mainstream simply because he wanted people outside the mainstream because they would do what he wanted them to do.
Right, and the thing is that the Federal Reserve Board, if you follow talk radio politics over the last 30 years, the talk radio hosts have been screaming about getting rid of the Federal Reserve. It's not part of the Constitution doesn't call for it. How dare we have it? And all of this, you know, it's been a trope for a long time. And so Trump decided he wanted to put a guy on who's been saying that for 30 years, right, to do away with the own institution. And the Federal Reserve is like, Most people who know the real arguments for why there is a Federal Reserve agree with it. It's not just because, find some, loudmouth talk show hosts, myself, excluded and included all in the same sentence here. But that, they get up there and scream that we got to do this. They're just trying to get phone calls, right? I mean, but there's real social policy here. There's really something that can happen. There's economic policy. There could be disaster on the other end. And there's a whole reason that this stuff exists. And that's I think, again, a little bit of what I'm going for here. But Philip, thank you for being here for my personal psychological session that you just had with me. I appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
Of course, my pleasure.
Thanks, bye.
Thanks.
All right, Philip Bump. Washington Post. Coming up, Stories of Matter from Kim Gordon in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Right now, let's find out what's happening in that newsroom.
Roe, no Cinco de Mayo celebrations in one Chicago neighborhood this year.